Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Teenagers are seen as really kind of universally addicted and obsessed with social media, but I think we are seeing this shift and backlash and people realizing that it actually can be more detrimental than positive.
Well, we've all been pushed around.
Hello and welcome to It's Complicated with Tanya Gooden, the podcast that helps you untangle your relationship with your phone.
Cause we've all been pushed around.
This is a podcast about learning to live healthily and happily with technology and the digital world, and about understanding why sometimes that's so hard to do. Because in learning how to step away from our phones more, we're actually learning how to focus more on our relationships, our work and our health, leaving us happier, healthier and with hours more time in our day. I'm your host, Tanya Gooden, author and founder of digital wellbeing movement Time to Log Off. Each week, I'll be asking a new guest what they've learnt about themselves from the relationship they have with the tiny tyrant in their pocket, their smartphone. It's quite a special episode today. It's actually the 50th episode of It's Complicated. I can't believe we're at episode 50 after 2 years. And it's also, on the day this episode comes out, International Women's Day, 8th of March 2021. So for both those reasons, I wanted to find not only a woman, but somebody really inspiring for this episode. And I found her in Amica George, who is a British activist and campaigner, the founder of the Free Periods charity, the author of Make It Happen, How to Be an Activist, and still a student at university, at Cambridge University. So I had a really wonderful chat with Amica about how she went from being a 17-year-old in her bedroom while still at school, deciding that she wanted to campaign for free period products for schoolgirls in the UK, how she set up a charity to do that, how she used the power of social media to make things happen and to put so much pressure on the government that, in fact, as of the beginning of 2020, period products are indeed provided free in schools, thanks entirely to her activism. So we started by chatting a little bit about what her experience of being a student in the pandemic has been like. You know, she's a member of Generation Z, the generation that are supposed to be particularly addicted to screens and social media. So how has she found suddenly being thrust on screens more or less 24/7, being taken away from university? What's that experience been like? And then the majority of our chat was really getting her to tell me how you set up a charity that makes real world change. She was so eloquent and inspiring. It's another of those episodes where I sat back and thought, I really haven't achieved anything with my life, listening to somebody who is still at university, who has achieved so much. She was very reflective about the huge strengths of the digital world and social media and how it's really worked for her, but also the negatives that she struggles with just as much as the rest of us, the comparison culture, the pressure to be always using social media, and the various kind of strategies and tactics she's put in place to try and make sure she doesn't fall too much down into the kind of dark black hole of the internet and continues to use it for the power of good. Really loved talking to Amica. As I said, she's incredibly eloquent. She's really very inspiring. I think she is the perfect guest for us to be talking to on International Women's Day. And I hope you enjoy listening to her just as much as I did. Amica, hi. It's lovely to have you on.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
All last year I was recording this podcast saying this is the last time I'm going to be doing a recording in lockdown. And we're recording this in January 2021 and we're still in lockdown. We're back in lockdown again.
I think it's going to really hit everyone if it gets, hopefully it doesn't, but if it gets to the 1 year mark of the 2020 lockdown, I think that's going to be quite upsetting.
I really think it might, the way we're going. I was going to ask you how you've found it, because you are actually a student. You're one of the people that we've all been talking about, you know, kind of how are students coping, the fact that you've had to put all your, you know, all the teaching, lectures, seminars, tutorials, everything online, exams online. What's it been like for you?
I'd say it's been tricky. It's definitely been a big adjustment. I'm in my third year of university, so my final year, I'm studying history at Cambridge. And yeah, so the first lockdown happened when I was in the middle of my second year, which fortunately, because I was kind of in the middle of my degree, my learning wasn't as disrupted as it was for other people kind of who were maybe in their final year or doing exams or that kind of thing. But it was definitely strange coming home for Easter, expecting to go back and then not going back until early October. And since October, starting my third year, it's been really weird because seminars, lectures, everything pretty much was online. And I'm really lucky, I think, that I live in a house with three of my best friends, but a lot of people did find last term very isolating, just because you're kind of sat in your room staring at a screen all day. And I don't think Zoom lectures or seminars are really kind of the same as an in-person lesson. I have a lot of sympathy, I think, for freshers and first years, especially at university. My brother actually just started his first year and described it as really odd having to, you're kind of only really exposed to one bubble of people who he was fortunate he got on really well with, but you just don't have the same university experience that you expect to socially and then also academically. It's just a lot of Microsoft Teams and the weird, awkward interactions of people accidentally interrupting each other or kind of having to share your screen rather than all just kind of looking at the same book or whatever. And then obviously you have the interruptions if people have to isolate. And then, it was definitely strange. And exams we found out recently are also going to be online, which is...
So you'll do your finals online?
Exactly. I'm doing my finals in May and June, which... It does feel kind of like uncharted territory because it's never obviously been done before. And the kind of format of the exams, I think this is pretty universal for most universities, of giving students a much longer time period. So I think I have about 6 hours exam that would usually
be. And it's open book, I assume, is it?
It's open book, it's all online. But I think that obviously raises the standard because if everyone has access to their notes, it's different. And also it kind of changes the way you study because I'm now kind of making notes and taking notes from lectures thinking I could actually use this in my final exams rather than having to memorize. So in that respect it is a good thing, but it's definitely strange, it's definitely different, and I don't know if there'll be much kind of consideration in terms of from the university stance how much they'll take account of in terms of people's kind of mental health, because I think just a lot of people have really struggled with how disruptive it's all been over the last few months, and also in terms of obviously people younger than me doing their A-levels and GCSEs, it's really difficult to kind of measure that impact and just how different their education will have been by the end of it.
It's really interesting because often people talk about the fact that your generation, you spend your, I'm using my fingers in awful quote marks, you spend your life on screen anyway. But actually, I think this has been a really interesting experience, seeing all of you having to spend your life on screen in a way that you weren't actually really doing before, even though the kind of narrative was, oh, you know, all you do is look at a screen. Has it made you appreciate kind of in-person interactions more, or have more of a problem with screen? You know, has it affected your relationship with tech generally, do you think?
Yeah, it's definitely changed. I think it's true that there was definitely a narrative, which I don't think is true, of teenagers being addicted to their phones all the time. And that was always portrayed, I think, in a very sort of blaming way, of kind of generation snowflake. And I think my generation have been painted as quite narcissistic and self-obsessed because we're always taking selfies and that kind of thing. And I don't agree with that in the first place, because I think actually we've proven that social media can be quite a powerful force for change. And I think that my activism has definitely benefited from social media, But I do think over lockdown, our relationship with tech has undoubtedly changed, because I think when you're entirely reliant on it for any sort of sociability or human contact, it really changes the nature of your relationships. I know that I have a really close group of friends who I would have normally seen at university every single day, and we went for months with just kind of speaking over FaceTime. And obviously people are in much worse situations, and I'm lucky that I at least have access to those kind of means of communication. But I think it does definitely change your relationships, but then it also, I think, has an undeniable effect on your mental health, just having to have that time that you fill by just scrolling through your Instagram feed and seeing people whose lockdowns maybe looked a lot better or more fun, or, you know, they managed to kind of escape to their country home or something. And I think I've always kind of liked to consider myself sort of immune to comparison, and thought that, oh, it's okay, I can distance myself from what I see on social media. But I did realise over lockdown particularly that you just have so much more time that you then spend on social media, and you can't really escape that feeling of comparison that really brings out insecurities. And I also don't think this is at all exclusive to the teenage experience at all. I think it's kind of a universal human trait that we all compare ourselves, obviously, and that doesn't help. But I do think having that distance from social media, which I've definitely tried kind of going for a certain amount of time without my phone, or deleting the Instagram app from my phone, I've definitely noticed a difference in just how I feel about myself and and just my mental health in general.
It's definitely not just a your generation thing. As you were talking, I was thinking that over Christmas, I kept looking on Instagram of all the people who'd managed to escape to the Caribbean, which there were quite a few, weren't there? And all the influencers that went to Dubai. And I had to stop looking at it, because I was thinking, gosh, you know, here we are in lockdown in the UK, it's cold, it's wet, and there are all these people on the beach. So, and it seemed even worse than it usually did. So let's talk a little bit about your activism, because that was actually, you know, the main reason why I wanted to talk to you, because I've known about you for a few years. You have just written a book, which when this podcast comes out will have been published. I think it's been published on January the 21st. Is that right?
That's right. That's
Make
right.
It Happen, How to Be an Activist. So am I right in saying that you started your activism from your bedroom at school?
Yeah, so I started it in the beginning of 2017, so I was 17. And yeah, that's when it all started.
Tell me what it was all about and why you started it.
Sure, so I kind of lived a very normal life being a teenager at school. I was in my first year doing my A-levels, and I read an article about girls having to miss school for sometimes 1 week every single month because they couldn't afford menstrual products. And I'm really lucky that I've kind of never had to be faced with that reality before. I've always, I think, taken for granted the fact that I have access to menstrual products when I need them. And I think it really hammered home a lot of things that people were talking about at the time, about rising child poverty and the fact that this was obviously proof that the girls were too poor to even go to school. And if they weren't missing school, they were forcing themselves to go and use awful alternatives, things like toilet paper or newspaper.
And this was in the UK?
This was in the UK. And yeah. the reason that it actually made headlines in March of 2017 was because a charity called Freedom for Girls was providing the products to schoolgirls who needed them in Kenya. And they were then contacted by schools in Leeds who had noticed kind of patterns of the same students missing school every month. And they had to then redirect their products from Kenya to Leeds. And I think that contrast just shocked a lot of people and made people realise that actually this is something that's happening right on our doorsteps. And it's really outrageous. And I was really upset by the news and quite angered that I found it felt like a lot of politicians and people in government were kind of condemning it in parliament, or the media were obviously talking about it, but nobody with political power was talking about a sustainable solution. There were obviously a lot of amazing charities who were providing the products in their local areas, but I didn't think that was enough. And I kind of expected that the government would step in and do something to change it. And when that response didn't come, I started Free Periods to try and lobby the government to provide free menstrual products in all schools and colleges in England. And it was a long and very difficult fight. It involved a lot of trying to raise awareness and get people talking about period poverty, which is obviously not an easy feat because periods are so heavily tabooed in society. But as well as that, we had a big protest in London at the end of 2017, which was attended by over 2,000 teenagers all wearing red and shouting about their periods, which was really fun. But even after that, the government didn't really take notice of it and pledged some money to one charity who, and that money was actually from the tampon tax fund, which is a whole other story, another campaign. But that money kind of came from the tax that we pay on tampons. We used to pay on tampons.
Because we don't now, do we?
We don't
That's
anymore.
Just been abolished.
Exactly. But that money, so they were taxed as a luxury before. So it felt like that wasn't really a sustainable solution because it was, I think, £1.5 million to one charity for a year. So it wasn't really...
not going to last very long.
Not at all. So then, over 2018, I was doing my A-levels and applying to university as well and trying to kind of make the campaign a bit more global in focus and talk about period poverty happening in different countries, which it definitely is. And I was really lucky to be able to travel and speak about in different ways and on different platforms. But that also felt quite ironic because, for example, I went to New York and I was really lucky to receive an award there. And I managed to speak to a lot of people and campaigners who are working towards similar goals in their countries. But that felt really ironic that the British government hadn't actually done anything themselves. So in 2019, Free Periods became a company and with a board of directors, and we started working with a legal team in London to explore how we could potentially launch a legal challenge against the government to say that they have a legal obligation to provide the products for free in schools. And that was going really well and we were preparing for it, but fortunately before we launched the case, the government actually made the pledge in April of 2019 to provide the products for free in schools. And that started at the beginning of 2020. So it's been in operation for about a year now. And it's, I think it's made a huge difference. I think it's overall kind of the principle that the government is providing the products for free and giving the schools the opportunity to order in pads and tampons in the same way that they order in toilet paper or soap. And so they're kind of saying that it's a basic,
it's essential. Product. Yeah,
exactly. The one problem I'd say, though, is that it's an opt-in scheme. So the schools themselves have the onus to kind of sign up for the products and order in the amount that they need. Because of that, there's a sort of lack of awareness, I'd say. A lot of schools, I'd say, are just not aware of the fact that they have this budget allocated for pads and tampons and period products for their students. So at Free Periods, we've been trying really hard to raise awareness of the scheme and also encourage young students and activists to really lobby their teachers and tell them that they want these products ordered. And obviously this is further complicated by lockdown and the pandemic, but actually schools are still able to order in the products that they need and the students can pick them up from school. So again,
that's brilliant. So they can still get them even though they're not at school. That's really
exactly
good.
But again, I think there is kind of lack of awareness and the government aren't really prioritizing publicity of period products right now, so we're trying to make sure that everyone's aware and getting the products that they're entitled to.
So what were your tactics? I don't want to give away too much because obviously we want everyone to buy the book. But, you know, when you sat there in your bedroom, you know, was the first thing, right, I'm going to set up an Instagram account, I'm going to have a website, I'm going to get a hashtag trending. I mean, what did you first do to think, how can I, a 17-year-old sitting in my bedroom, raise awareness of this and actually make something happen?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I think it was more of a process than maybe it seems looking back. I think on the very first day I started it, it was just a petition on change.org because I thought that I'd signed a lot of petitions before in the past and I knew that they were compelling and kind of really showed how many people were behind one call for change. So the petition came first and it started to gain momentum and then a lot of people were signing it, but then contacting me and saying that they wanted to do more, they wanted to share it around their networks and they wanted to post it on their Instagrams. So I realised it was becoming bigger than just the petition, basically. And also as we started to organise for the protest, obviously social media was indispensable in that process because all of the raising awareness and organisation for the protest was done via social media. Absolutely everyone who came, other than my kind of closest friends and family, had come just because they'd seen a tweet or an Instagram post or something like that. So the petition came first, then the social media accounts. And then it's kind of always been mainly focused on Twitter and Instagram, I would say, in terms of the protest, because I think that was really proof of how far it was going in terms of social media reach. We kind of got in touch with, so I was working with the Pink Protest, who are a feminist activist group, and we kind of realised that we wanted artwork and graphics to be a big part of it. So
people could share it.
Exactly. Yeah. So we were contacted and we contacted a series of amazing illustrators and artists who provided really incredible imagery that was shared around everywhere. And it kind of produced this incredible effect of the same posters and graphics that we had had. We had the details of where the protest was and what it was about, who was speaking, who was coming. It was all on this one thing that was then just being shared everywhere. And it was just such a surreal feeling to kind of go on my Instagram and just see everyone I follow post it. And then it kind of moved on past my circles to people I didn't know and their friends. And then in the end, I think a group came from Northern Ireland and a group came from Cornwall for the protest. And it was just really just surreal on the day to see that social media had had that impact. And even now I'm still continually contacted by people from around the world who are interested in free periods and expanding its reach and starting their own campaigns elsewhere. And I think as a 17-year-old girl at school, I could really have not have done any of that without the power of social media.
Yeah, and I found out about period poverty because of you. I also had never heard of it, and I remember becoming aware of your campaign. I think it was about 2 years ago. So yeah, it spread everywhere to all age groups, and you know, to kind of all parts of the country. And it must feel amazing to you to have achieved that, doesn't it? Must feel really good to think you've made that happen.
It does. I think it's when I get those messages of people who have said that period poverty was something that I've really struggled with until these products are now available. I think that's when it really hit home for me that this is having an impact. But I think in a lot of ways I'm the kind of person that's always, as soon as we achieved our goal, we're kind of thinking about what to do next and how to go global and work with other activists and other campaigners. And so I think in some respects I haven't really processed just how big a change it's made.
So, I mean, it's interesting, isn't it, thinking about how positive, because I agree with you, how incredibly positive social media is for raising awareness, and then think about the negative side, which we were just both talking about, the whole, you know, comparison culture thing. How do you balance it? Because I noticed you mentioned earlier that you've had moments of uninstalling Instagram and, you know, spending less time on social media. How do you get that line between, you know, getting the best out of it and not getting sucked into the dark side of it?
Yeah, I think if I had the answer to that question, my life would probably be a lot easier. I don't think it's something that I've achieved, I'd say. I don't think I've kind of got that balance yet. I think I've definitely worked out little things that will kind of make me feel better or worse, and yeah, sometimes having Instagram I know isn't that good for me, and so I will uninstall it. Or sometimes I'll come across like an account that I followed when I first got Instagram, which was a few years ago, and now it doesn't make me feel that great anymore, so I'll unfollow it. But I do think it's definitely a balance. I think I personally don't think that I could just delete everything. I definitely have friends who are part of this. I don't know if I'd call it a trend, but it's definitely kind of a growing, yeah, kind of awareness that maybe life would just be better with no social media. And I know friends who have deleted their accounts entirely, but I don't think, especially because,
yeah,
I think it, I do think it is really interesting, because I think it's, especially from the sort of parent or adult perspective, teenagers are seen as really kind of universally addicted and obsessed with social media. But I think we are kind of seeing this shift and backlash and people realizing that it's actually kind of can be more detrimental than positive. But I wouldn't say that I kind of sit in that camp just because of how positive it's been for my activism, and also because of the people that I've met and been able to collaborate and work with over the last few years. I know that my social media feeds are just always full of examples of people using it for really positive campaigns and galvanizing people and raising awareness and actually making change, tangible change, through petitions or social media, or kind of celebrities using social media like Marcus Rashford quite recently. Again, I don't think without that accessibility that's afforded to people like Marcus Rashford, but also people like me and everyday normal people who have an idea or feel really enraged by an issue, the fact that we can just go to our phones and talk about it and ask people to, if they agree, and if they do agree, to take this action and write to their MP or tweet their MP, or even, I mean, obviously it's different in lockdown, but before the pandemic, come to a protest or organise in real life or volunteer at a charity. I think that's something that social media uniquely has given us. I think that's the positive.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavourless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Do you keep a line between Amica George, the, you know, person and free periods? Have you got personal social accounts and then the free periods account, or have you always kind of used just the one?
Yeah, I've always had my own personal account, which I had from the age of 14 or something, and then I made a separate free periods Instagram account, and I didn't have a personal Twitter because I never really got into Twitter. Yeah. So I made a free periods Twitter when I first started the campaign, and it's interesting because I've definitely noticed a difference in audience and also just kind of the the vibe of a conversation on Instagram versus Twitter, I think is
they're very different, aren't they?
Yeah, definitely. And I think I get a lot more negativity and backlash generally on Twitter anyway, so I've never really seen the appeal, and I'm not a huge user of it. But then I think as the campaign grew, I realized that my kind of personal identity was becoming very synonymous with free period, so I wanted to have a bit of separation. So in terms of Twitter, I've never made a personal account, but I made a separate private personal Instagram, which just my friends and family follow. And then my account it's kind of complicated because my old account was private, and then I decided to make it public. I think it was probably about a year ago now, which was really strange because I was private for a long time, and people would see something about free periods and want to follow my account, so request it. And then when I made it public, I just had this kind of terrifying moment of like all these followers from 3 years of being private flooding in. So that was quite intimidating. But I've kind of now, I do have this public Instagram account, which I find really useful because I think it's where I can talk about the things that interest me outside of period activism. And as I mentioned, Free Periods isn't just me, it's a team of amazing people who I work with all the time, and I think they're incredible. And we work collaboratively now on what Free Periods stands for and what it does in terms of social media and activism. So my own kind of interests obviously lie outside of that sometimes, so I post about that on my personal accounts, and obviously with the book as well, that's all just me. It's obviously drawing from my experiences with activism and Free Periods, but it's also a lot of other things too.
It's really interesting because I hear this a lot from people of your age, this kind of nuanced approach to social media of having different accounts for different purposes. I think that is quite a big change, actually, because I think people who were on, social media sort of 10 years ago just thought, well, I'll have one account and it will do everything. But I think an easier way of getting a balance is to do what you've got three then, haven't you? Because you've got Free Periods, which I appreciate it's not just you, your public Amica George, and then you've got a private Amica George as well. That's kind of three different faces.
It is, yeah, it does feel like that sometimes. I think that's something that I've also I've started Free Periods, and because it kind of grew really quickly and almost kind of unexpectedly, even though I did try and really get it out there, I don't think also because I was quite young, I really thought about just what it meant to have a kind of public face and identity, and people were able to just kind of scroll down to a picture I posted with my mum when I was like 15 and could comment asking for an interview or something like that. And I always kind of just didn't take it that seriously when I was younger, but as I got older, I'd say when I turned about 20, I realized just how intrusive that was, and that probably wasn't healthy, because I definitely do struggle with having just that separation in terms of Free Periods and activism versus just everything else in my normal life and my degree. So I think going on my phone and then seeing people asking things like that sometimes felt a little bit too much. So I think the private Instagram account really helped me to separate that.
So what's next for you? You'll graduate this summer. What are you going to do? Do you know yet? Are you staying in academia? Are you moving into activism? Are you doing something completely different?
So I thought about continuing with academia and doing a master's, but I think I need a break first. I think I'm going to have a year at least to just kind of focus more on my activism, take a bit of a break. The book is coming, is out now when this comes out. And
when this is out, your book will be out. Yeah.
Yeah. And so it will be cool to be able to just focus on that, because I think I've always had to balance academia and being at school, university, with activism. And so it will be great, I think, in the coming year to really focus on that more and talk about the book and potentially do something in real life in terms of book publicity when if that ever becomes possible. And so, yeah, I think I don't have any kind of concrete plans right now because I'm wary of making any. But my dream this summer would obviously be able to travel and just kind of chill out a bit after I graduate, hopefully.
Is Free Periods where your heart lies, or are there other causes that you want to get involved with, or do you think you've not really done enough yet with Free Periods? Is there more that you want to do?
I mean, in terms of where we're at right now with the campaign, so we're still continuing to really scrutinise the government scheme and make sure that as many schools are signed up as possible. And as I mentioned before, I've always been really passionate about period poverty and on a global scale as well, and talking about the fact that it exists in different countries. And in a lot of countries, there just really isn't the same level of awareness and activism that there is in the UK, because my campaign is obviously focused on education and schools, but there are a range of activists and campaigners and charities and organisations who are working on period poverty, which are suffered by homeless women, by asylum seekers, refugees, women in prisons, women everywhere. And I think that's something that I'm really fortunate that I feel like I am part of a larger community of people who care about this, but it's not the same in other countries. And even countries kind of in Europe or elsewhere where you kind of wouldn't expect it to be such a prolific issue, it definitely is. So I've always tried to work with other activists who are around the world and doing similar things, and encourage them and see if they can learn from free periods experience or if we can collaborate in some way. But I don't want to kind of, I've always been wary of kind of imposing our own strategies and ways of working. But I'm definitely passionate about other things too. And as I said, because free periods has become a lot bigger than just me now, it's a team. I feel like I have my own passions and interests I'm really, really excited to hopefully pursue when I get a bit more time after my exams.
And when you're allowed out in the world again.
Yeah, exactly.
So I've got three questions that I end the podcast with. So I'm going to ask you three words. Give me three words to sum up your relationship with tech and the digital world.
Sure. So I think my first one, which we've talked about quite a bit, is conflicting, because as I mentioned, I do have this kind of struggle between the good and the bad of social media, as I think everyone probably does, just in terms of how beneficial it's been to my activism and everything that I've engaged with over the past few years. But also it can be damaging, obviously, for my mental health and everything else that goes with that, but also in terms of the backlash and the trolling and the kind of ugly side of activism that I do think everyone who's ever kind of had to put their thoughts and ideas out there has had to deal with, which is...
Particularly if they're a woman. Yeah.
Definitely if you're a feminist campaigner talking about periods. So I think conflicting is the kind of the best word I could think of for that, because it is just a conflict, and I don't know if there's really a solution to it other than obviously taking the necessary steps to mute and ignore and try to not take things personally. It can get worse and it can get a lot more damaging, in which case I kind of talk about this in my book, that if it does reach that level of becoming very serious or damaging, then your campaigning can definitely be compromised. Okay, so my second word is informative, because I think I don't know if I even have really fully registered this until I thought about this word, but I don't really have any source of news or information outside of social media, which was obviously different years ago. Especially over lockdown, I realised that there was often this kind of parallel world between what I was like walking into the kitchen and seeing my parents watch on the news, and then going on my phone on Instagram. And I'm thinking particularly here about the Black Lives Matter protests in summer last year, where I did notice that the kind of narrative around what happened and how people felt and how they were engaging and responding to the atrocities of Black people being murdered in America, I found that really, I don't know, kind of felt like a wake-up call in terms of what social media can often provide in terms of really giving you that grassroots information and opinions.
Of what's really going on. Sources.
Yeah.
It's interesting you talk about seeing your parents watching on TV, because I've actually just written a piece yesterday about how the age difference, it starts at 45. So above 45, TV is where you get your news, and below that it's social media. I was looking at quite a bit of research around that. But yeah, and that is really interesting, because as you say, you do get a completely different perspective from those two sources.
Exactly. And even more recently, with the attack on the Capitol, I realized that even like the language and the way that it was being described by people that I followed on Instagram versus newsreaders on TV was really different. And I think in a lot of ways that can kind of empower you to make decisions about what you think about things when you are presented with multiple opinions or multiple sources of information. But then it's also quite, scary to think that if you didn't follow certain people or if you didn't have access to social media, you're kind of only being fed from one source. So yeah, I find that quite interesting. But yeah, and I think even today when we've seen a lot of outrage about the free school meal packages that were delivered.
Listening to that on the radio before we spoke.
Exactly. Yes. So to see the fact that the people who are affected by it posting photos of it and tweets going viral, we would have never known if we didn't have social media.
That's so interesting, because that's exactly what I thought when I was listening to it. I thought, what would have happened if we'd had lockdown without social media? No one would have been able to get the picture out and say, look, this is what a meal looks like.
Yeah.
That had such a powerful impact.
Exactly. And I think, this could be a whole other podcast episode to go through all of the U-turns that the government made over the last year. But I think so much of what the government's been really held to account in terms of how they've handled the pandemic and the national situation. And a lot of that, again, has been because of social media.
Yeah.
From people raising their voices and saying this actually isn't good enough. And so, yeah, I think it's been empowering in that sense when you have no other choice but to stay at home. It's really given people a voice. And yeah, I think my third word would be pressure, because I think this is very much a universal thing that it does come with a lot of pressure on people, regardless of how many followers you have. I think I identify Instagram more closely with this one, but just in terms of kind of images and visually having to present yourself a certain way. And something that I found interesting in my activism is just the frequency of posting, because I've never been someone to post a huge amount, but I do often, if I haven't posted in a few days or I haven't been active or engaged with my followers, I feel really guilty. And I think in a lot of ways I probably should be using Instagram more than I do, but I also think it is a very strange culture we live in right now, when people do feel like you always have to have opinions and you always have to say the right thing. And like, if something happens on the news, you have to show that you care about it. And I think that can come with a lot of pressure, especially as someone who has, quite a lot of people who follow me and look to my opinion on things. I think as someone like balancing my degree and everything else that comes with being a young person living through a pandemic, it can be quite a lot sometimes. Yeah.
Yeah. I was thinking the other day, there are some people I follow who are posting constantly. I mean, their story is updated every 25 minutes throughout the day. And I just think the pressure associated with that must be phenomenal. I can't imagine what that must be like to do that all day, every day.
Yeah, and I do think it's definitely, it depends on what you're like as a person, because I think some people really thrive off that and really
love it.
And don't find it draining, and they're also having an amazing impact in that they are really reaching people and making a change and encouraging people to read certain information or sign up to petitions. And I think if you're the kind of person that can do that, that's obviously you should be. But I don't think we should normalise the culture of everyone having to post about everything they do or everything they care about
all the time.
Because it also can feel fatiguing, kind of an overload of information sometimes.
So I love that. I love those three words: conflicting, informative, and pressure. Brilliant. Second question: what do you wish that, this is quite tricky for you, I think, given your age, because I was going to say, what do you wish you'd known about the digital world before you started using it? But, you know, you were very young when you started using it. So I don't know. Was there something that you wish you'd known a bit more about?
Definitely. I think the one thing that came to mind when I was thinking about this is, I think a lot of people talk about, and there is a kind of narrative around being really aware, especially as someone young, that you should be really careful about what you say, and there's just the kind of the internet lasts forever and you should make sure that everything you post you're completely happy with it. And I think that's obviously definitely true, but I do think, especially as someone, when I had when I was much younger, I'd say I agonized so much and I cared so much about what I said and writing captions. And I think I kind of wish I could tell myself that it matters, but it doesn't matter that much. And I think it's, yeah, having, again, it's about balance, realizing that you obviously shouldn't say anything inappropriate because things do last forever, but also that in the grand scheme of things, nobody's going to think differently of you if you use one word over the other, or, you know, if you post something and then decide to delete it later. I don't think it's a big deal. And again, I do think it just comes back to the way that we feel about social media right now, and that it really can make you compare yourself to people all the time and start to equate your self-worth with likes or comments that you get on a post. And I definitely don't have the solution to that or advice to tell people how to switch those insecurities off. But yeah, I think sometimes I, especially when I was younger, just cared way too much about it. And so I wish I could tell myself that nobody really cares as much as you do.
It's that whole pressure thing, isn't it? Yeah. I remember being very self-conscious about dancing when I was really young and being told actually no one's looking at you as much as they're worrying about themselves. And, you know, yeah. Social media, sometimes we could help ourselves by thinking that a bit about our social media as well, couldn't we?
Yeah.
That people are so fixated about their own posts and their own stories, and that actually they're probably not paying quite as much attention to us as we think. So last question, what do you think you've learned about yourself from your relationship with your phone, the digital world, technology over the years?
So I don't think this is really new. I don't know if I've learned this about myself because I've always been this way, but I've realized that I'm just incredibly nosy as a person, that I think social media obviously does feed this. And I think, does it count as social media? Yeah, I suppose YouTube, I was going to say.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Definitely has helped to spur that on, in that especially I'm thinking about YouTubers, and especially when I was younger, being really into watching vloggers and that kind of thing, which is such, I think as I've got older, I've just really reflected on how strange a concept it is to just kind of know so much about somebody's life and be kind of kept up to date with it every week. And yeah, I think it's really interesting.
And yet not meet them ever.
Yes. Exactly. Exactly. It's really, I don't know. I think there's a real, it's a psychological thing to do with, having this weird, odd kind of allure around just really normal people living normal lives. And I'm thinking also about like study tubers.
Yeah. Yeah. I've had some of those on my podcast.
Oh,
yeah.
Really?
Amazing. I had Jack Edwards and V.
Oh, yeah. Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think especially when I was a bit younger and doing my A-levels and my GCSEs, I would watch those, and it was kind of a weird, I don't know, form of like motivating myself, because I'd feel really bad if I wasn't as working as hard as I could see other people, which is probably unhealthy. But it just kind of feed into our broader culture of just wanting to know everything about somebody's life. And you have that thing of like somebody who's becomes well known through these platforms, and you end up like following them on YouTube and Instagram or Twitter, and it becomes this like huge, really relentless insight into everything about them, and, you know, their boyfriend and their clothes and what they're eating. And I don't know, it's just, I think for me personally, it's made me realize that I am really kind of sucked into that because I am quite nosy. But I do definitely see the appeal of, watching YouTube, and I don't know, feeling like you have a personal connection with someone that you've never met. It's just a really odd concept to me.
It is weird, isn't it? As you're explaining it, I'm thinking if we'd known this sort of 20 odd years ago, that's what we would spend our time doing, watching people's real lives.
I did a really weird thing in lockdown when I realised that summer term last year was online, not cancelled, and we wouldn't be able to go back, so everything was online. I started watching Cambridge vloggers so that I could, I think it was like
reconnect with
exactly
Cambridge.
A weird kind of way of imagining that I was in the place I wasn't. It was really bizarre.
Oh, it's been so brilliant speaking to you, Amica. Thank you so much. I want to encourage everyone to go and pick up Amica's book, Make It Happen, How to Be an Activist, which is out now. And I really hope that when lockdown lifts, we're going to see, you out and about promoting it, because I think that would be fantastic. Hopefully, by the summer, we'll be able to do that. Obviously, you have to get your finals out the way first. So good luck with those.
Thank you.
And they're not, they're starting quite soon, are they? Is it May, did you say?
Yeah, May. Or yeah. I've got to hand in my dissertation sooner than that, but my actual exams are in May and June, yeah.
Well, I won't keep you from your dissertation much longer. But thanks so much. It's been absolutely brilliant. I've loved it.
Me too. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to this episode of It's Complicated. If you haven't already, please do subscribe, rate and review the podcast on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts from. It helps other people find us and it means you get a helpful little notification when a new episode becomes available. For more about getting a healthy balance with tech, you can follow me, Tanya Goodin, or Time to Log Off on Instagram and Twitter. And both my books, Off and Stop Staring at Screens, are available on Amazon and at all good bookshops. Finally, for more information about this and other episodes in the podcast series, visit itstimetologoff.com. Lost everything you tried to see, 'cause we've all been swept away.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.